camo box or anything around because there's no place. A lot of times we use film canisters. It's very easy to hide it, especially in evergreen, or a bark of a tree. You could take something like this and lay it in there, and that's the way the cache would be. Same thing. Now, these don't have any goodies inside, but they have a log book and a pencil. So you can't trade any items, but you can go ahead and still log it as a cache. Then when you get home, then all you do is you can log onto this cache page. So you just make an entry and say, oh, I had a good time. I saw a black snake or whatever you want to put in here. And it'll keep track of how many caches you found.
So once you find it, you put it back.
Right. You don't take the container. When people hide these, sometimes they're not necessarily checked on all the time. If you happen to come across it and find out the logbook is full or the container is leaked, go ahead and log it, but then you make a note on the cache page and you say, found it, but needs maintenance. Logbook missing, logbook full, logbook wet. Every time somebody logs a cache that has been placed by somebody, the owner will get your log automatically as an email. They will be aware of if there's something wrong. Normally, when we hide a cache, it has to be approved by what we call an approver. Missouri has an approver, and he happens to be from St. Louis. So that really makes it to our advantage because we know him, he knows us, and he knows the St. Louis area. If we place something, let's say, in mid-Missouri, he'd still be the approver, but he might not know the area real good. He doesn't physically go and locate each cache. He doesn't make sure they're where it's supposed to be. All he does is look at it, make sure it's within a tenth of a mile or more of another cache. Also that it's not near a highway, a schoolyard, playgrounds, underneath a bridge on a highway, not near railroad tracks. The railroad tracks are probably the hardest thing now for him to check because so many maps still show the railroad tracks, but they're actually bike trails. Those familiar with Grand Trail, Katy Trail, some of the older maps may show it's still railroad, but being from this area, he'll know which one part aren't. So once we hide a cache, he has to approve it, meaning that he looks at it and it looks like it's an okay place and lets it go. Something else we do is what we call travel bugs. A lot of families like these because all it has to be is it's a dog tag. It's got a serial number on it. It can be any item. It could be a McDonald's toy. It can be a favorite pen, whatever you want. And a lot of times the kids, if you got brothers and sisters, they may each get their own travel bug. They'll put it in a cache, and then they'll give it a mission. Just let's say you're from New York. That's where you're born and raised. They want it to go to New York and come back to St. Louis. So they can have a race between these two travel bugs. People will find these in the cache. Should be a little note with it saying, this mission is to go to New York and back. Somebody might pick it up and say, oh, I'm going to Chicago next week. I'll take it. And he'll go to Chicago, find a cache in Chicago, and deposit it in the cache. That gets tracked on the webpage, and it'll show you exactly what cities, what states, and what caches it was in. It'll give you a map with all the connections and show you exactly how far it's traveled. Sometimes what happens, you say, I want it to go to New York, and some guy doesn't read the note, he takes it to Kansas City. Well, now, you know, it's farther away than it even was to start with. That's what these are used for. A lot of people really like these and really follow them. Let's pass these out, and we'll show you how to do several things on these.
Everybody got one?
Everybody got one?
Are they all turned on? Now, just so you know, this the yellow thing on top here with the black lobe, the antenna is right below that. In other words, it's below this piece. So you need to hold it horizontal or flat so the satellites can pick that up. Now, if you everybody's on the same screen, that's the satellites. So if you notice, you've got seven bars. I've got seven bars. So we've picked up seven out of the 24 satellites, which puts us around 20 or 25 feet accuracy. In other words, if somebody says, I've hit a cache at that tree, and gives you the coordinates, it should get you within 20 or 25 feet of that tree. Now, it makes a difference when you get out in the real dense woods in the middle of summer and you have lots of big trees and you can't see the sky. You'll lose some of the satellites and you'll lose some accuracy. And that's just the nature of the beast. So wintertime, obviously, is the very best time to get good satellites. Yes, ma'am.
The bars on here, they keep going up and down. Right?
Yeah, that's because as you move it, the satellites can't come through you. So if you move it, all of a sudden you're blocking one satellite and another one may come in. So that's not uncommon. As we're walking, going to a cache, these will change. We'll
so
pick up different satellites. Normally, they won't be all at the very top. Mm-hmm. Okay, what we want to do first is make a waypoint. In other words, we're going to make a waypoint where we are right here. So we're going to go and do our three caches. And then when we're done, regardless where we are when we're done, because we're all going to go different ways, you can say, let's go back to where we started, and we'll pull that waypoint on, and it'll bring us right back to here. What that's really useful for is if you're out in a park or somewhere you're not familiar with.
You get out of your car, you're off your bicycle, whatever. You press it and say, make a waypoint. So that's where you need to get back to if something would happen. So you can go out in the woods now and hike the trails and walk. Let's say it starts raining. Let's say it starts to get dark and say, well, hey, we've been out here an hour. We better get back to our car or our bike. I don't know where it is. All we've been doing is weaving around. Well, you can say, go back to my waypoint that I made at the car. And even though we've walked for an hour in the park and around, we may only be 500 feet from the car if we just walk through the woods. So we can say, go to, and it says, oh, it's 500 feet, and we can just walk straight to the car. We don't have to worry about trails or anything. So that's where that comes into play. This uses a compass to show us direction. A normal magnetic compass, you just stand there and points the magnetic north and you know your direction. This compass here uses satellites. It's an electronic compass. What that means is it knows right where we are. It knows we're standing right here, but it doesn't know what direction we're moving if we're standing here. It doesn't really know where north is because it doesn't know if we're this way or this way or this way. As soon as we start walking, like 5 or 10 steps, then that arrow will switch around and point us to where we want to go.
This is an accurate.
Well, it's very accurate, but not
no, not sitting.
You're doing the stuff that...
Yeah.
I'm Dennis Cook.
Dennis Paul Conopac.
Yeah, I got you.
Hey, Dennis, tell me what the deal is with these garments.
I purchased 30 of them. They're down... It's not these. They're downstairs in my office. They're still in the boxes. I got to take them all back. So I got to return them all back to the Alpine shop in Kirkwood.
Man, they're going to not like that.
No, they're not.
Buy Garmin's? Is that what you bought?
The exact same yellow ones.
Yeah.
This is my interview with Barb Wilson of the Missouri Department of Natural Resources. We talk about her career with the department, why she likes her job, and the geocaching policies she created for placing caches in Missouri State Parks. We discuss MOGA, which stands for the Midwest Open Geocaching Adventure. This geocaching competition and caching get-together is in its fourth year and was held at Mark Twain Lake, Missouri in the spring of 2007.
Paul Conopacki here with Barb Wilson. Geocaching name is?
Ebony is the name of my best friend, my black lab. I just keep her with me all the time. I was asked to come and do the geocaching workshops for the WOW because I work with it and administer it for that program for the Missouri Division of State Parks. Through that, I've gotten to know a lot of geocachers around the state. So I hit SLAGA because of their expertise to put this on, and I told them that you guys put it on and I will help you. So I want to be here to support them as they do my work for me. My philosophy as a supervisor is to provide my people all the tools they need to do their job. I'll sit back in the wings and let them take the glory, and that's fine with me. I've been with DNR, with the state parks, the majority of my working history. I've been here over 23 years. I started in 1976. However, I did take 7 years off when I got married, and then I came back. So I have a total work history with the division for 23-plus years. I loved my jobs, and I came back because I love what I do. I have a degree in recreation and park management. I love people. I love to play. I love to be outside. Although I don't get to play as much as I'd like to, I love being in that atmosphere, and I love people who enjoy the outdoors and take it to heart, and they're going to take care of it.
Where are you stationed within the state of Missouri?
I am in Jefferson City in our central main office. I'm in the position of the training and conference coordinating for our division. That is my main responsibility. And geocaching was just something that came to me. I didn't even know how to spell it. I didn't know what it was. I volunteered to write the policy for our division for geocaching, and I didn't have a clue what it was. It has opened a number of doors for me, but the richest part of this is getting to meet all the people that I've met through geocaching.
How would you differentiate a geocacher from maybe a hiker? Is there much difference?
They're both out in an area that they love to be. You will find that hikers and geocachers alike are ecologically very responsible people. Geocachers are going to at times take it a little slower. They're going to be off the beaten path where you won't find your normal hikers. Most hikers come out and they hike the trails that are established, where geocachers are everywhere. So, and that's what's fine. I mean, that's okay. We like that.
Okay.
That helps us out too.
How did you get involved with planning of the MOGA?
Initially got involved in it with the first one at Hahn State Park. And I didn't get so much into the organization of it because basically it was a really new concept. I was asked at that particular time to come to MOGA and talk to the group about our policy. Geocachers were scared to death that we were going to say, don't come to state parks. But quite the opposite. We want them to be there. We embrace the idea of the activity, but we wanted to make sure that they were safe, our resources were safe, and so we wanted it to be a win-win situation for both groups.
And that communication takes away some of the fear on both sides.
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
You're real people.
Well, but also they see a government agency isn't trying to,
there's a face to
take
it.
Away something that this group enjoys doing, and also puts a face to it. I am the go-to person when it comes to geocaching. And with the support of all of geocachers around the state, we have been very fortunate to share our policy with other states and their agencies. They've embraced it as well. And we get calls when we first initiated this. How's it working for you? What are you experiencing? We have nothing but good things to say about geocachers and the activity as a whole. That in itself, one government talking to the other, they're going to say, hey, why not? So they had the same apprehensions as well. But it's been a good experience for everyone. And now it's history, and it's a good history. So we can just move forward from day to day. Anytime we have to rewrite the policy or revise it, I call some of the people who I know who are actually involved in the process. What can we do to make this better so that everybody's comfortable with it? So I do get that input from Rich and Mike and some of these folks so that we can.
What are some of the key policies of geocaching, putting geocaches in state parks?
First of all, we have a permit system. We need to know where the caches are to make sure that they're not in a place where our facilities don't want them to be for a lot of different reasons. Safety reasons and visitor safety is key to us, but also we have to respect the resource. We don't want them up on a high bluff where someone may try to climb up there and get hurt. We have prescribed burned units. If we're going to be doing prescribed burns, we would rather them not be in there. Because if someone is in there during a burn and we don't know that they're in there, someone could get hurt. We try to look at it from all of those different perspectives. And also, if we have established trails that we see developing, we want to move those. That's why we have the every year renewal. We have some facilities that are so popular that we have people waiting in line to put geocaches out. And we like to share the wealth. We as an agency have the right to remove a cache and archive it or completely disband it if for any reason it is not permitted or we find a violation of the policy. And a lot of that would be mainly for safety reasons for our visitors. So those are some of the basics of the policy. But here again, it is connected to our website under Frequently Asked Questions.
Okay.
And you can pull up that policy and read it exactly as our managers are asked to administer the policy with our general population.
And there is some type of restriction on distance?
We don't want it oversaturated, but we do want people to experience the park. But we would rather have two or three in a park as opposed to 200. We've got some resources where they're very limited. The Katy Trail, the acreage is big, but it's long and thin. If we had 400 on there, we'd have them on top of one another. But there are reasons for limiting those, and a lot of it has to do with the resource itself. And we have some pristine resources where we can't allow geocaches to be. So those are some of the reasons that we have the limitations.
Is there something particular about Rockbridge Park-sponsored caches there where they may not be park-sponsored caches in other places? Because I guess a lot of the caches that are placed in state parks are by individuals and not necessarily placed there by the park department.
That's correct. Most caches in the state parks are done by individuals. There are a couple of state parks that have placed their own. A lot of our state parks are not necessarily savvy to this type of activity. Therefore, they either don't have a GPS unit or they're not that familiar with it. Plus, they have bigger fish to fry. It's not a priority on their list. However, we do have several facilities that are very well attuned to what's going on, and Rockbridge is one of those. They keep right on top of everything that's going on at their park and geocaching, and working out in their resources is one of their top priorities, and they're very good at watching what's going on and monitoring what's going on in the park as well as on the Katy Trail, because they also take care of a section of the Katy Trail.
Do you devote a portion of your time going to geocaching.com and looking at caches? That's a problem cache. I want to keep an eye on the logs on that one.
I have a watch list. 90% of all the geocaches in state parks that I watch on a daily basis. So if you visit the ones in state parks, and you log a cache, it comes to me automatically. Yeah, and I read all of them.
Are you still caching yourself?
You know, I don't cache as much as what I probably should or would like to. When I first started this, my goal was to visit every cache in the state parks. I haven't quite got there. You know, you would ask me about reading the logs for the state parks, and I do read those. I find some wonderful things. On our way to a family reunion, just stopped in to get a couple caches. Or the last week I read one where they were traveling from Wisconsin to Texas for a reunion or a meeting, and they happened to stop in on their way to get some caches, or visiting grandma for the summer, and here we are. One of them I thought was really interesting, and this has always stayed in the back of my mind. In Columbia, there is an old cemetery that we take care of. We used to have a geocache in that cemetery, and one individual wrote, "I have driven by here for 13 years, and I've never stopped. And geocache has taken me here." And I love that, because that's what this activity has done for a lot of different people. It's taken them places that they never would have gone before. Yeah. Some of the other things that I find is, and people will ask questions, why was this building here? What was it used for in the past? And if I'm not able to answer that question, I will find somebody who can and get back with them. Or if there's a problem, you know, in the park, you know, indicate that in there, and we will send that to the facility to let them be aware of it. One time I had a log that said, "Oh, we used to ride our mules here," or "My mother rides her mule here." Well, I didn't know if that was a four-wheel mule or a four-legged mule. But regardless of which one it wasn't allowed in that park. And so we needed to contact the facility manager to let them be aware of this, as well as get back with that individual and let them know what our rules and regulations were. Also, we have some of the geocachers complimenting our staff, and when I get those, I send them back to the facility and say, "Good job, you guys. You know, somebody has appreciated you and documented it as such. And if that happens to you, please let us know and log that in so that our staff can know." One thing that we do appreciate is the cash in, trash out, because that's critical to everybody.
And I guess geocaches are your eyes and ears.
Absolutely. And we look at our general public as being just that, because we can't be everywhere at all times. And any kind of communications that we can offer back and forth is more than welcome.
What do you see as the future, then, of geocaching in the activities of the state park?
Currently, I think it is leveled off. I think it's very active. On a weekend like today, I'll probably go back and have over 100 geocaching logs on my computer on Monday morning. That's almost a given after a nice weekend. As far as what's going to happen next, in the last couple of months, we've had a lot of discussion of what do we need to do to encourage getting the younger folks out from in front of the television and the computer games and get them back out to what's real. The Trail of the Month, Passport to Your Health, is a big effort to that. Geocaching also can be a part of that effort. I would like to see geocaching something that...
win?
Something that we can embrace to try to get families, kids out into our facilities so that we can get them out to do healthy exercises and learn more about the world that they live in. I hope that's something that you're going to see in the next year.
Obviously, it's a good relationship between the geocachers and the state parks. So
it is.
I expect it to continue and hope it grows.
You bet it will.
Thanks,
Bart.
You're
welcome, Paul. Okay, what do you think?
I love it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I hope to see you out on the trail somewhere.
Never
any,
know.
Any other questions or anything?
Nope. Do you guys have any questions about it?
Nope.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
Kind of neat.
Did you find anything?
Yeah. Yeah. I know you like those. Yeah, you know they like that. Anything electronic. More money.
Right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
for your time.
Welcome. Just glad we could help.
No problem. Yeah. On your sheets, there's a cache called Clang. Mm-hmm. It's an actual geocache. Does anybody want to go look for it?
Yeah. What's it like a dollar bill?
No, it's not money.
Case container.
That's a small one.
Yeah. And all it has is a log sheet in it.
But it's a real
but
cache.
It's a real cache.
You need to go do it. Park. You can leave your stuff right here and go with them.
Yeah.
Look, go with it.
We'll watch your stuff.
That was part two of audio from the Wild St. Louis event held in Forest Park. As you can tell, the Missouri Department of Conservation and Missouri Department of Natural Resources are aware of geocaching and are actively pursuing the hobby as one of many recreational options they offer to people who use the land that they manage. I encourage land managers who are skeptical about allowing geocaches on their land to look to the economic and recreational benefits provided by the positive relationship that Missouri geocachers have established with city, county, state parks, and conservation areas. If anyone is interested in what MOGA is all about, go to the following URL in your web browser, moga.geostl.com. You will see images, web videos, audio, winner lists, and information on how to order a video DVD at the latest MOGA event. These episodes are published under the Creative Commons No Derivative License. To contact me about these podcasts, send an email to podcast@geostl.com.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.